Hello and welcome to the EV Cafe Takeaway, a podcast focused on the electric and zero emission future we all hope for. I'm Paul Kirby and I will be joined by various members of the EV Cafe crew this week, John Curtis in the house, and we will have an amazing privilege of getting to know and understand some of the wonderful pioneers, innovators and collaborators of our industries. Today, no exception, the wonderful Steve Williams. Steve Williams of Direct Line Group. Wow. Do you know what? Steve Williams is, he's been in insurance for a long time. I've looked at his LinkedIn profile, go compare, or well, the competitors, right? Well, they're not a competitor really, are they? Because, no, I'm not digging a hole that we're going to have to edit out, am I? No, that's fine. And also, you know, in Gloucester University, so you came out of your native Wales to come and learn something excellent and studied English literature. There we go.
Yeah, you're researchable.
Indeed. And what interesting fact do we know about Steve? Well, that he managed to celebrate New Year's, not all in the same year, in London, Las Vegas, Sydney, and San Francisco. All before we knew about the carbon impact of flying, of course. Steve, welcome.
Thanks, Paul. Thanks for that. That introduction. You clearly have done your research. You've gone back some way into the past to dig some of those.
Scroll down LinkedIn all the way to the bottom.
Yeah, and I definitely had hair for some of those facts back in the day.
Didn't we all,
John? Didn't we?
Some point in the dim and distant past. So, Steve, tell us a little bit about what you do, who you work for, and, you know, give us the elevator pitch, get us excited about what you do for Direct Line Group.
Okay, so try and make insurance exciting. Thanks, Paul. That's a hospital pass. So I'm heading up EV strategy at the Direct Line Group. I'm sure most of your listeners or viewers have heard of Direct Line Group. So we have a stable of brands in the shape of Direct Line, Churchill, Privilege.
Oh, yes.
Right on cue, John, right on cue. And we also have a price comparison-only brand, Darwin, that launched a few years ago. And that's to ensure personal customers for their personal vehicles across the UK. And then on our commercial side, we also work through our brands, Churchill Expert, Direct Line for Business, and NIG. So we're supporting personal and commercial customers with their motor, home insurance needs and business needs. And I guess the role I'm playing as head of EV strategy here is to try and make sure that all of our decision-making, all of our thinking, all of our product development services that we're delivering are starting to think more and more from an EV customer's perspective. You know, given that we know the regulation for new EVs only from 2030, we've got to start thinking about that like everybody else now, not in 7 years' time. So that's kind of my role. And why is it exciting? Just because the speed of change is so rapid. It's already happening right now. It's not 2030. It's not 7 years away. It's happening right today. And being able to speak to people across our business who are really excited about what that means for them as individuals, for the teams they work in, and for our business as a whole, is really motivating, really galvanizing. And there's a lot of energy behind what electric vehicles means for Direct Line Group in the conversations we're having right now.
Steve, I mean, that's fantastic and super interesting because, I mean, I've learned a lot just in that first little bit about the diversity actually within Direct Line Group. You always think of the little phone with the thing, but there's so much more. You know, there's lots of other brand things that come to life. You know, many of us know it's not the brand image today, but the of the nodding dog. And, you know, I didn't realize, there we go. So it's exciting. And I think we got to speak as the EV Cafe with a wide section of your business, and the questions were just brilliant. And the real, and also the knowledge as well, the real high level of knowledge within your business and across a vast array of people in lots of different elements of the business. But how long has EV been on the mind of Direct Line Group? You know, because obviously it's not just today. You've been in this role a while. How long have Direct Line been thinking about electric vehicles?
So really, since they arrived in the UK. So we've been insuring electric vehicles since the Nissan Leaf arrived over a decade in the UK on our roads. And therefore, we were already starting about EV back then. We're also Tesla's UK insurance partner, have been for the last 5 or so years. So again, very much wanted to forge that partnership with them because we could see then that, you know, here's a totally new manufacturer approaching things in a totally different way, and potentially, as they've turned out to be, the pioneers of, I guess, mass adoption of electric vehicles. So I think it's always been probably in the background, but it's probably only the last couple of years where, you know, as with lots of other companies, we've started to see an increase in the range of vehicles available, and therefore the number of people starting to purchase vehicles, and therefore the associated insurance. So probably the last 2 years is where we've really started to focus on, right, what does this actually mean? And I think when my now boss kind of said, oh, would you like to come and help me on electric vehicles? And the toe in the water was fully charged live back in, what's that, 2021? Or was it 2020? I don't know. I've lost track of my dates. But yeah, the first
one. The September one. It was the 2020.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, that's right. So we went to that one, and that was kind of a real eye opener for us.
Yeah.
So that was a real eye opener because we were going in fresh as, you know, how big is this electric vehicle stuff really? And actually, it's a lot bigger than we realized. And we also then started to think about, well, how does this feel for, I guess, general customers? Because we were conscious there's early adopters at that kind of type of show. And we were probably coming in and having the same mindset or the same thought process as lots, if not the vast majority of people in the country would have had turning up to that show, which is there's 50 people telling me their charge point is the best. There's 20 manufacturers all telling me their electric car is the best. You know, how do I navigate through this? So that was really, really good from a, okay, this is probably what customers will be thinking in the next 5-10 years as they make that transition, but also really good in terms of we're probably further along this than we realized, and actually we need to start putting some real focus behind that. And that was kind of the instigator then for setting up a full-time team to look at electric vehicle strategy for Direct Line Group.
So let's pick that up, Steve, because you've talked about the journey that you've made, and that's in the space of 15 months. You've gone from starting out on this journey down the EV road to where you are now, where you're driving the jive, if you like. You're walking the talk in that you've now got an electric vehicle and you've got a home charger, and you've had to make some personal decisions as well as making these big corporate decisions. What helped you make your personal decisions to drive an EV? What have you got and what do you charge it with?
So you're right, John. Yeah, 100%. So I know a hybrid is probably a different thing now than it probably was 7 years ago. So my real first step on this started 7 years ago when I ordered a BMW 3 Series hybrid through our company car scheme back then, because I was conscious that we didn't really drive very far. At that point, I was commuting to London every week by train. And my wife wasn't working, so we weren't really traveling very far. So I'd already made a conscious decision that, right, here's a good deal for a car here, which means we'll drive very few miles on petrol, and therefore that's good for our budget, but also good for the environment. And at that point, we had a two-year-old daughter. And again, I think once you have children, you start to be a bit more conscious of things that are going on in the world and what the future will look like for them. Unfortunately, 3 months after we, and I say unfortunately, I'll reword that. 3 months after we had the car delivered, we found out we were pregnant with my son. And then we opened the boot of the said car. And obviously back then, there were no electric vehicle platforms. It was just a massive battery stuck at the back of the car, which meant your boot went to about this deep. And we could fit a very small pram and one carrier bag in there. And we just thought, well, no, there's no way we're going to be able to fit all the stuff you need for two kids in that car. So unfortunately, my
son... So which child did you get rid of?
Oh, yeah. So my son cost me what to that point was my nicest car. Yeah, so that had to go back. And then at that point, we just obviously went back to a normal kind of estate car just to fit all the stuff in. But that, I think I was still very conscious that we'd already made that decision back then. And then I guess like a lot of people, I was probably thinking, well, I want to get back to an electric car because we really enjoyed that. For 3-4 months we had it, albeit we were driving electric for most of the time on that small battery. Obviously, we know now that actually, you know, hybrids probably aren't that good when you think about all of the factors that go involved. And actually, once you are driving off that electric period and onto the petrol, you know, they're not very good at all for the environment. So, but I think back then with the information I had, it felt like a conscious decision from the right angle. And I think that's kind of carried on through. So once we got into my role being focused on electric vehicles, and then the very first thing I did when I moved into the squad was go and test drive about a dozen electric vehicles because I wanted, but I wanted again to put myself in the consumer's shoes, John. I wanted to understand what is each of these electric vehicles like, but also what is it like to go to a garage and ask a dealer to try an electric car? Do they know it? What it's about, can they explain it to me? And again, that was really mixed. So I think that was kind of the starting point for me way back when. And then as soon as we were in the squad, I started looking and I wanted to get an electric car straight away. Because again, I think once you get into an electric car, you go, wow, these cars are so much nicer, they're quieter, there's loads of space, all the things that you guys know and have experienced yourself. So at that point then it was which electric car? And then I almost had paralysis by analysis, which is, oh my god, there's so many great electric cars, and there's another one coming out in 3 months, and there's another one. Which one? If I order an Ioniq 5, what about an EV6? Or hold on, there's going to be this car coming down the track, and then there's going to be this car, and then it's kind of like, which one do I do? So I finally went for an ID Buzz. So I've ordered an ID Buzz in the middle of last year.
Wow.
Because it looks cool, and the kids will be amazed by it, and it's got enough storage for all the tent and the camping stuff that we do. So back to your original point, Paul, I don't go to San Francisco or Las Vegas or any of these glamorous places anymore. Now I have two children under the age of 9. I now go to camp in West Wales.
Which is a very beautiful part of the world, West Wales. It's an absolutely stunning part. And I'm looking forward to seeing a photograph of the ID Buzz overlooking the Gower Peninsula or something like that, which would be a stunner, wouldn't it? So the ID Buzz comes when?
Well, I ordered it in July and it's supposed to arrive in November.
Okay.
So luckily, somebody on our car scheme was handing a Model 3 back, and therefore our scheme manager said, well, would you like to have this in the interim? And I thought, well, yeah, let's make that plunge. And so that was delivered 2 weeks ago, and the charger, as you referenced, John, so we had a Zappy, My Energy Zappy, fitted last week. So I've done my first official charge at this house of a full electric car, and I have to say my kids are obsessed by the Tesla. They think it's like the most amazing. It's probably the one point in their lives where I will be cool. And after this, it's all downhill. I'm taking this sort of 3-month, 4-month window of being a cool dad because we've got a Tesla.
Fantastic. I mean, it's interesting, isn't it? The market is evolving so quickly, and you know, I focus on the van world, and you've talked a lot there about the cars, and I think both vans and cars are experiencing this paralysis by analysis because so much is coming. You know, what about this or what about that? But we've got to make decisions based on like getting on with it, haven't we? And throughout what you've said there, you've referenced back to the voice of the customer or putting yourself in the customer's shoes. What are you hearing from that experience? You know, what are the products that and the things that your customers are beginning to ask for? What's the voice of the customer for you?
So I think from an insurance perspective, it's a really interesting one because as a customer, you want the same thing regardless of how the car is powered. So you want to know that our brands are going to be there for you in your time of need. So if you have, hopefully you never do, but if you do have an accident or your car is damaged or stolen, that we're going to come in and live up to our promise of, you know, fixing that car, getting you back on the road, replacing it, and doing all the things you expect, regardless of whether that's an electric vehicle or an ICE vehicle. So in terms of the innovation around the product, I think customers just want to know that, am I covered for things like batteries? Am I covered for cables? You know, they're the main things, and obviously those things are covered within our policies. Where the innovation comes around that is more in the background. So, you know, it's how working out whether driving an electric vehicle over time is going to be different to how our customers have traditionally driven an ICE vehicle. So we've got decades and decades of modelling and understanding of how people drive a Ford Mondeo or a Ford Fiesta or a Nissan Micra. You know, all of these ICE vehicles are out on the road. What we don't have is the same equivalent data for electric vehicles. We've got a much shorter time period. For you guys, clearly, you've been driving electric vehicles for a long time, but you're in the minority. So we don't have loads of data yet, which tells us what, if any, changes we're going to see. You know, there are some hypotheses around acceleration in a vehicle is very different in an ICE vehicle, in an ICE vehicle to an EV. So does that mean we're going to see a higher propensity of incidents with customers in the first 2 to 3 months while they're getting used to the fact they've now got superpower acceleration versus, you know, their traditional family car? However, on the other side of that, does charge and range anxiety mean people are going to drive more conservatively, slower, and be more conscious of how they're driving in order to conserve battery and be able to travel longer? And therefore, does that mean we're going to see less accidents? The fact that ICE vehicles are mainly new vehicles with the latest technology, the latest safety kit, does that mean they're less likely to be involved in accidents? So there's all of these interesting hypotheses. At the moment, we don't have the data to understand. But from a consumer's perspective, I think it still comes down to, can we be there at the time of need and get you back on the road in the time scale that you're expecting? And that's, you know, that's what we're working really hard to continue to deliver through that transition and give customers the comfort that insurance isn't a blocker, it's not an issue. You know, you'll still get the same service, the same quality from us, whether you drive an EV or an ICE vehicle.
It's great to see that you're bringing confidence to people on an important area. I mean, it's an area that we often don't think about until we have to, right? You know, insurance is that thing that, or I'm legally obliged to, or I have to do it. And, you know, it struck me that one of the key differences is that acceleration. It's one of the things that I'm bothered about, actually, in the van world, is that there's a lot more power available in these vehicles. So it's good to know that actually it's business as usual for you guys. And, you know, as the new vehicles are coming on, you're getting them in and are able to insure them. But yeah, it's cool. I know John has a question.
You've spent much of your life, Steve, in insurance, and you must have delivered an awful lot of change over that period. What are you most proud of delivering?
Great question, John. What am I most proud of delivering? I think, so I'm really proud of the work we're doing right now, if I'm honest. Mm-hmm. So my time in insurance, and you're right, it's probably too long for me to really think about it. But, you know, when you're doing something like this, you go, oh, actually, yeah, wow, that is a long time. Yeah, it must be 15, 16 years now. And no one grows up wanting to be an insurance person, do they?
No.
Or if they do, you probably don't want to sit next to them at dinner party. So I think at the moment, yeah, the fact that in sort of 18 months or so, we've gone from nothing to having a really engaged set of colleagues wanting to drive forward that electric vehicle agenda, that we're having. I do feel privileged to be in a position to be helping to what we're terming electrify DLG. So how do we help our colleagues, not just our customers, but our colleagues also understand what electric vehicle transition means for them? And, you know, that's working with our Ian, who heads up our car scheme, and how we can make more colleagues aware of that. The sponsorship deal with you guys that's helping bring your knowledge, your expertise in to help answer. As you say, we had the questions we had last week.
Stop it.
We're awesome. We're amazing. You know, they weren't
brilliant.
Man, the smoke. It wasn't just the fact they were asking things like, you know, I'm nervous about range, or I'm, you know, about charge, you know, the kind of standard stuff. They were asking some really interesting questions about hydrogen, resale values. Again, you can tell we work in insurance. So things like that. I think it's just exciting to be part of something. And what really resonated with me was my current boss when he kind of brought me over. And it's what I constantly think about is it's very rare in your working life that you get to work on something which is exciting, but also has a meaningful difference for the world around you. And, you know, and it can sound a bit corny and a bit, we can get a bit caught up in what it means. But ultimately, the reason we're doing this is for cleaner air for everybody, children, but ourselves as we're here now. And then also hopefully, a cleaner, greener planet for everyone that comes after us. So it's exciting to be part of that, that movement.
Absolutely. And whilst things are going well now and you're achieving great things and pushing forward in the EV world, there must have been times in your life where you've been really tested and you've had to pull yourself up by the bootstraps. Can you talk to us about Steve Williams, the man? What is it that's really tested you and made you dig deep to find the best version of you?
So the climate crisis isn't the first crisis I've had to work in. So back in 2008, we're going way, way, way back. So back in 2008, when I worked for HBOS, the bank, and that was right in the middle of the financial crisis. Now, that was a very interesting place to be. Yeah. And we went from, you know, Gordon Brown, boom and bust is over and everything's great and, you know, everything's on an upward trajectory and growth in the UK economy, etc. And the bank was no different. You know, everything's great. Your quarterly meetings where everything's on track. We're doing really well. And then all of a sudden, the senior leadership team started to be very, let's call them invisible rather than visible. And I started to think, well, something's not quite right here. There was kind of murmurings and so on. And then clearly living through that sort of month where, you know, Goldman Sachs is going down and, you know, different banks and we're teeter on the edge of a global financial apocalypse was, yeah, crazy to be sat on the inside of a bank. And just to be clear, I was in a commercial lending role. I wasn't an investment banker, one of these guys, you know, millions, and the guys who were selling the, you know, mortgage-backed assets that got us the whole global economy into that trouble. I was just a guy who had a portfolio of small businesses that we were lending money to around property development. And I went overnight from being a relationship manager who was there to support growth to being the person who was being sent out to say, there's no more money. And we need to put all your fees up. And we've closed a load of offices. And Steve, we're going to give you all these customers you've never met. And you're going to have to go and speak to them and explain what's going to happen. So, you know, walking into some of the businesses there where they would say, oh, hi, Steve, you come to sort out the extra 200,000 I need to finish my development. And you say, no, I haven't. I've come to tell you there is no more money. And well, I guess, you know, that's a real learning curve because for those people, obviously that's their livelihood. If you're going in and saying, I can't do this, I can't do that, then that's potentially putting them over the line and putting their whole life upside down, essentially. So you learn a lot about going and having that conversation. And I've always tried to approach life with being empathetic for the person on the other side of the conversation, which I feel stands me in pretty good stead. You know, what are they thinking? What does this conversation mean for them? And if I say this, how would that play out? And then what I would have to do then is go back. So I'd be in Cardiff. These people could be in Gloucester, Bristol, Reading, all over the place. And then our credit decisioning team were in Edinburgh. And I remember just going back and speaking to them and saying, well, look, yeah, I could send these guys to our high risk team. I could just, you know, double their fees and close everything off. But actually, wouldn't it make more sense for us to lend them the extra £200,000 for them to finish their development? So they've then got an asset that's either saleable or rentable. That's got to be better for them. It's got to be better for us because it means they can have an income, they can pay us, or ultimately we've got an asset. Then if the worst comes to the worst, we can then sell on. So having, again, that conversation on behalf of the customer, being in the customer's shoes and then advocating for them within the business to make sure we were making decisions that were customer focused rather than the easiest one to get them off a report onto a, you know, another report. So yeah, that switch from being the guy who was helping the business to the one who was delivering the bad news was a hell of a learning curve, and I think one that I really appreciate now, because I don't think I'm ever going to be in as stressful a situation as I was in that 6 months to a year. So that's doing a good set, as well as for having kids. I think that's a good. It'd never be.
So yeah, that's, I mean, probably. Let's hope, Steve, that you're never in that position again, or any of us are in that position again. I mean, we did worry a little bit back end of last year where things were seemingly quickly heading down a drain. But, you know, that's really, it's powerful. I mean, it leads me to the question, because it seems like you took, as you mentioned there, a real empathetic view. And it also, you know, you're always very aware or conscious of your customers, the people around you, the people that you're working with, you know, within Direct Line Group as you electrify, but also, you know, the customers out there in the big wide world. You talk then very sympathetically, compassionately about the people that you were working, you know, to lend money to and stuff like that. Because you said, you know, nobody at 18, 17, 16 wants to go into insurance necessarily, or how did your career path happen? What is it about the young man, Steve, maybe in school, maybe as you left school, what created the man that we see before us today? What were those life-forming events that made you compassionate and aware in the way that you are?
So I think, if you go kind of, you know, I guess right back to the start, so mum and dad, two very different characters, and I'm probably a blend of, as you'd expect, a blend of the two. So mum, very, very intelligent, very motivated, very driven, fiery Irish woman. And then my dad, so you can see which bit I'm going to come from. So this is my Irish bit. And then my dad is from a Spanish background, hasta mañana, so relaxed, you know, everything tomorrow, super chilled out, but equally very clever guy. So growing up, our house was always the house where everybody came to, where we had fancy dress parties and birthday parties. And when I went out with my mates, they would end up crashing at my house rather. And therefore, I've always kind of grown up around big family, very open, and, you know, kind of just take us as you see us. So, you know, if someone knocked on the door to come in, it wasn't, oh, quick, rush, we've got to tidy. It was just, hello, open the door, come in, have a biscuit and a cup of tea type thing. So I think that kind of is the starting platform for that. Just, you know, being comfortable going into a room and just speaking to people and just being aware of, how to talk to people and be around people. And then, you know, you go on to university then, and that's great. Going out of your comfort zone, as you say, I went to sort of Gloucester and had a great time there. My dad would tell you I had too good a time there. On the social side rather than the educational side. But again, for me, that was probably the bit that I took as the learning. Again, it's that bit to go out, stand on your own 2 feet, but again, be around people and make those social interactions and network, I guess, even at that young age. You don't call it networking, but I guess that's what it is. And then I kind of came back and so I said, well, I don't want to just go into any old job. I want to get a decent job, which pays pretty well. And my mum was totally in agreement for the first week I was at home. And then as you'd expect, you've come back from the freedom of university to live in your mum and dad's working. I then joined HFC Bank, which was essentially they were the guys who did the finance. So if you went to Curry's or whoever and bought a laptop or an electronic device, they gave you the 12 months interest-free. And then the job of HFC was you would ring these customers and say, look, you're going to pay that laptop off in the 12-month interest-free, and if it wasn't, it was then right, well, if you come in, we can move you on to a different kind of credit facility and so on. So that was kind of the start of financial services. It wasn't a specific choice, it was just that job paid a good salary at that point. And then from there I joined Halifax Bank Scotland on their grad scheme. I joined in their credit team, and then I set up like an admin team within the department. And then I saw an advert for the grad scheme. So even though I'd been a couple of years out, I still qualified. And I went through that and I got onto the grad scheme. And again, that was brilliant because that gave me access to lots of different areas of the business at that time. So, you know, the head office, the tender, loads of different places to go and see what makes a big business tick. Obviously, we then gone through 2008 and kind of exiting the business there. Well, and really, I just decided what I'd loved about the relationship manager job was helping people. And then at the end of my time there, I wasn't helping anybody really. I was just trying to, you know, mitigate things rather than help people grow. And I kind of left, took redundancy with no real plan. I just felt like it was the right time to leave banking. It was quite a toxic environment, as you can well imagine, after what I'd just been through. And then a friend just said, look, I'm working at a company called GoCompare. Have you heard of them? No. They're a price comparison site. I don't know what that is. Right, well, come and have a chat. I think I was the 60-something person to go and join. And it was great. It was like, you know, the CEO just sat at a desk like everybody else. And it was a great time. We were working in a space where it was growing. At that point, Confused was the biggest one. And I remember every time, or felt like every week, we'd have a record of this or a record of that. And then, right, everyone, free pizza. Brilliant. Love it. And we'd have great nights out, great camaraderie as we were growing that business. And then...
Steve, before you move on, you're Welsh.
I am Welsh.
And you worked for GoCompare.
I did.
Is there any chance you could sing the song?
Well, maybe this should have been my interesting fact. I did once play GoCompareo because GoCompare did a pantomime for charity. I could probably find a picture for you somewhere. And my only contribution was to run on stage about three times, dressed as GoCompare, and just sing GoCompare. So that's what I had to do. And I was wearing the official moustache they wore in the advert.
Brilliant.
That was probably a better fact to leave off on.
No, we should have led with that fact. It's an amazing fact. But what do you know? What's really comforting about talking to all the people that we get to do is that nobody really had a plan. You know, we hear about all of this stuff, and I've arrived at 54, and I think, how did I get here? Well, it was a happy accident. I didn't leave school. I barely made it out of school alive. Didn't do very well for the next few years, and stumbled from one job to the next, and have ended up here. So it's comforting to know that I'm not the only one that has had a happy accident of a career. But John, I know you were thinking about something.
I am, but there's something really funny has just happened. I asked Steve the question, could he sing the song from GoCompare? Siri kicked in on my computer and said, and said to me, I'd rather leave that to a professional.
which is definitely not me, by the way.
Hilarious. How I kept it together, I will never know. Steve, let's move on. You are somebody who always looks on the bright side. You're hugely positive, and you look to the future. If you had a magic wand to deal with something that was less positive, what would you use that magic wand to achieve within your work, your workplace, the industry more widely? What would you do? What spell would you cast?
So my spell, John, not just for EV, not just for insurance, but for the world around us, is that people were only given real facts. So you could only base your judgment, and you were only given real facts.
Really good.
People couldn't just make stuff up. It had to be proven, and they were genuine facts, so that everybody makes their own decision, and everyone should be empowered to make their own decisions in whatever they do in life. But they should be empowered to do that off the basis of having real information, genuine facts, so they're making an informed choice, not a choice that is created for them by mainly the vacuum of social media and I guess the media content that they ingest. So that's probably, for me, the biggest thing that would make a difference, not just for EV, but society in general. If we're able to make decisions off real, genuine facts, then I think the world will be a much better place.
Gosh, yeah, exactly. And it's such a succinct and clearly thought. I mean, Steve Williams for Prime Minister in my book. I mean, just bring it on.
happily, you know, chip in. But luckily, there were no camera phones back in my university days, so there shouldn't be anything to come back out.
It's so powerful, and it's such an important thing. I think, you know, we've got our webinar, which we do monthly, of course, which is happening tomorrow, but in real time as we're listening to this, it'll have happened, and it's all about love and hate. And one of my hates is the sort of difference between the real world reality of an electric vehicle versus the proposed sort of WLTP, you know, whole vehicle, light vehicle harmonized measuring rubbish. Yeah, it doesn't work. So that's why I never remember the acronym. You know, Steve, it's been fantastic. What do you see for the future for Direct Line Group, for you, as we sort of think about, you know, bringing this into an end? What does the future look like for you?
So I think we're a really customer focused business. We want to support customers and colleagues make that transition to electric vehicles, and I think we're making the right steps. We're looking at the right things. We're, you know, we want to just continue to be seen as a trusted partner for our customers, and if we can play a role in helping them make the transition to electric vehicles, whether that's just by having great insurance policies which give them peace of mind, whether that's through, you know, offering them information and access to, you know, experts and people that can give them some clarity around some of those confusing points, then, you know, I think that'll stand us in good stead. And it'll mean that in 2030, when the world is, you know, looking at 10 million electric vehicles on the UK roads, we'll still be one of, if not the biggest, insurer in the UK, helping customers with their insurance needs at that point. You know, that electrification doesn't change what customers need from us. It just means we need to change in order to deliver great value for customers then, as we do today.
Fantastic. John, any final thoughts? I mean, that you wrapped it up brilliantly, Stephen. Thank you. It's been a pleasure, hasn't it?
Yeah, my final thought is, never are we going to interview anybody as nice, as genuinely humble, as really focused ever again, because he just makes us look bad.
It's lucky my wife's not here, John, so I'm not sure she'd agree with any of them. He tells me I don't lack any confidence in life, so very kind of you to say.
Holding those two things work together well, confidence and humility and compassion, bringing those things together well is a skill and an art, and I think we've just experienced it beautifully. So Steve Williams, thank you so much for joining us from Direct Line Group. And, you know, from where I'm sitting, Direct Line Group is in very, very safe hands from the electrification element. And all our customers, your customers, are as well, which is exciting for me. So, Steve Williams, thank you so much again. It's been a wonderful time on the EV Cafe Takeaway podcast to interview one of the great collaborators of our industry, bringing people together beautifully, as you've heard, and listening to the voice of the customer. But if you want to get more from the EV Cafe, please head on over to our website, evcafe.org, or follow our LinkedIn page. And check us out on all the other socials. And do keep listening to all of the future EV Cafe Takeaway podcasts. So from John and I, and from Steve, thanks ever so much, and have a great day.
Thanks, guys.
Oh, yes. All right, I think we're done now.